Yes.
All right, so we're semi-live. We're live.
Are
right
we?
Now. Yeah.
We are.
Like,
okay.
This
it's
is
not
recording.
A test.
Nope.
Okay.
No, this is not a test. So we were just talking about mic tips on Voices from the Dark with Dina. This is episode 17. Oh, I should probably get my card out. I have always have like a card because I don't like to remember things. So I have these pink cards that
That's
I always
That's a good
from.
Idea.
Yeah. And I try to make it a thing, like in the show, that, you know, I have pink cards. Sooner or later, there'll be white cards and then maybe blue, but right now they're pink. So it's episode 18. Today is October 3rd. This is the artist series, number 11. And I have here with me Dina, a painter, let's just say, and she can introduce herself more in a moment. I just want to make a couple announcements. Usually I do, like, I've done, like, six-minute announcements in the beginning before, but... Basically, I've got it down to like 20 seconds. So yeah, we're recording live from Clash Bar. As usual, check the website for updates on Mistaken Ideas, this series, the artist series, and the new series, the political one, The Spectrum. Sundays, we're live at La Beto Lab in Neukölln at 4 p.m. every Sunday for the foreseeable future. So let's get on with it. We're definitely recording. That's a good thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, Dina, who are you?
Oh, it's a very tricky question.
Yes.
You cannot start with this. Come on. I thought you had your questions ready.
Okay. How about this? Let's do it. Another cheers, since we already cheers.
Yes,
before.
Another cheers. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So let's start with that.
Let's
cheers.
Let's do some more booze and...
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
And we also have sort of a supplementary guest. I mean, it's it would just be weird not to mention that she's here.
Yes, true.
So Alex, I don't know anything about Alex.
So both of you are my former colleagues from my past life.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so full disclosure, me and Dina used to work together, or Dina and I, whatever, to be grammatically correct. And I always knew that she was a painter, but I don't think I ever saw anything until recently.
Right.
Which is, yeah, very interesting, if you ask me.
Thank
and
you.
I think you
Thank
also
you.
Enjoy it.
Yes, I enjoy it very much.
Yeah.
I do techno painting. Which is a phrase that I guess I coined because no one else does this. Basically, I illustrate techno sets while the party is going on in the club, trying to bring the vibe of the party and the sound of the music into a visual effect in a very traditional way, like oil on canvas or acrylic on canvas. And I'm
awesome.
Extremely lucky that I actually get to do this. Lucky and hardworking because I was working hard to get the connections and to get there. That clashed a little bit with my previous career in online advertising, but this is really a past life.
Cool. Yeah, I definitely have a sense that this is something that, you know, you have to work at, and like the connections, you need to work at making them. So that's what you do right now. I try to do this like who, what, where, when, why, how thing, like very journalistic, just to keep it easy. So you're Dina. Just tell us more about who you are in general. Maybe like, okay, you're a painter, but that's not just who you are, right?
Yes,
other,
that's true.
Other
that's
things.
Not just. I guess I was always... searching to get to this point in my life. My whole life felt like I'm waiting for this to happen. It was like a very long trip when
this
it's just...
This podcast.
This podcast.
No,
oh,
no,
yes. This Sorry. Moment, of course.
I'm just kidding.
This moment is everything. it always felt like I'm almost there, but not exactly there until I was there.
Hmm.
And... I think it actually happened with the help of some drugs, but...
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Well,
but
a little bit of help is good.
I have to thank Berlin for this, because it's definitely the kind of city that allows this. And it did happen in Berghain, when I finally felt that, oh, wow, where have I been?
Yeah.
I'm here. I'm alive. I can do what I want. And it just follow this, it's like a little snowball that just grew and grew and grew into the fact that I am actually doing what I want, and it's actually showing me some fruits of my work.
That's great. So I like the way you say snowball, because it's like it's going downhill, getting bigger and bigger.
It's actually a bad analogy. I don't want to go downhill.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just that it's gaining momentum.
Yes.
You know, so that's exactly what this podcast is all about. It's what took you from that small, tiny little snowflake or whatever to now a big rolling snowball? So, like, so this question, who are you? And it's like, where are you from? Like, yeah, what is your... Where did your artistic journey start?
Well, I'm born in a quite artistic family in the first place. And I was born in pretty much the end of the world in Chelyabinsk, Russia, which no one knows exactly where Chelyabinsk is unless you're Russian.
Okay, I should probably write that
but
down.
I think the good equivalent for this, or maybe somewhat close equivalent for this, would be like Detroit in U.S.
So
it's like a very industrial gray city, a big one.
What is it called?
Chelyabinsk.
I'm going to spell it how I think it's spelled.
I think it's spelled differently every time, but I think it's...
Google will tell
you. Yeah, just Google it. Better. It's like Ural Mountains, southern Ural region, just over Kazakhstan.
Oh, okay.
So really like the end of the world.
Very cool. So you were born in Chelyabinsk.
Yes,
Chelyabinsk.
And my parents are musicians, and I think my childhood was always surrounded by music and art, and I actually had a quite nice life in Russia until we immigrated to Israel when I was 8.
So you were there till you were 8?
Yes.
Your parents were musicians always, I guess, ever since you were born. So, what was the first artistic thing you did? Was it, or that you think you did?
I always did something of self-expression. I always painted. They noticed that I draw and paint quite well from an early age. I was writing like poems, which were hilariously funny and ridiculous, but I did that anyway.
Cool.
Didn't feel ridiculous to me. No. They were just laughing at me afterwards. Yeah. I always felt like I need to have this, like I need to have self-expression. And I think nothing was attractive enough for me. Like my mom sent me to like ballet class and dancing and stuff like that. And obviously like some painting classes, but it wasn't enough. Mm. But I do remember a moment from my early childhood when I was like 6 in a resort somewhere in a mountain when there was a discotheque. And that was my first ever... time when I was inside a room with loud music and all these lights and the feeling of a disco, of a party.
Okay.
And I remember this moment because it's living with me, because that was again this feeling of, I like this. This is mine. this really connects to me.
The dancing specifically, or the music?
Yeah, it's like the effect, the darkness, the loud music, and the lights shimmering above. And this feeling of energy that you just feel it.
And what was the name of the place?
Oh, it was like a resort. I was with my parents. Yeah. Let's just put it this way. For anyone grown up right now to get into that moment would be like absolutely nothing. But for me, the 6-year-old, it felt like Berghain.
Okay. Yes. I see what you're saying. It was just some resort, but for a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense. All right. And that was... Wow.
I think I always knew that I like this. Mm. And as I was growing up and watching TV and things, and every time there was this scene of people in a club, people like partying, like even partying hard, I was like, I want this. Mm. It's attracting to me. I don't know why, but I really want this.
Okay. And how, so I guess that explains the whole techno part of the techno painting.
Yes.
But what about the actual painting, like? Because what I've seen of your work, you know, basically mostly from Facebook, and if you have a website or any other
stuff. I do have
stuff,
a website. Yeah, it's technopainting.com.
Oh.
One
so
word.
Super easy. I don't even have to write that down.
Yes.
Technopainting.com. And I'll put that into the show notes on the website so that people know where to find your work. From what I know, it looks, you know, like you said, you know, it's like oil or acrylic on canvas, and it just seems like you have some kind of education in painting. So,
right.
Yeah.
I did go to art classes. I did go to a considerably good art high school in Israel. But I did neglect it for afterwards because I went to university. I studied something else completely. And
what was that? What did you study?
I studied history and art history. Well, the art history, I guess, is more connected, but the history a little less. Mm. Because I saw my parents as they were really struggling financially, and it was very hard for both of them to continue being musicians. Mm. And I felt that I need to have more of a profession. Not that studying art history is a profession, but I kind of went straight to sales afterwards, and I was a salesperson, and, well, it's, you know, an account manager later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I neglected the art, which was kind of a mistake, because this is what I was missing, and I started falling into depression when I just felt like my life is going nowhere. I don't like what I'm doing. I don't like where I am. I don't even like who I am, and I don't know how to change it.
Mm. Okay.
Yes. So, and I even coming to Berlin, which was something I really wanted and was like almost destiny pulling me, like I need to get to Berlin. It was still like my first year and a half depressed, zombie asleep, just working, and that's it.
Yeah. So it was first. So Berlin was the first place that you were, an office zombie? Or?
Oh, it started back in Tel Aviv.
Ah,
but
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so this is one of the topics that I always try to get into. It's like, what is the balance between art and, like, survival? So, like, I always talk about it as being, like, the money jobs, the jobs you do just for money. It's, like, the survival part. Like, how do you, you know, it's like, what do you, like, people have, like, crazy weird jobs as artists, right? But not all...
Me
not
right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, yeah, I mean, but as an artist, that's an artistic job.
Yeah.
That's an artist job, actually.
Yeah.
It's not an office job. I mean, or is it?
I can't do office job anymore.
Right.
That's it.
Okay.
I can't.
Okay.
I'm not going back there. Because when you do an office job, when you take the responsibility of that office, of whatever the firm is doing, and you sit in front of a computer for 9 hours... You can't do anything afterwards. You're exhausted, even though you didn't do anything physical. Okay. You're just exhausted, mentally and physically, and yeah.
Yeah. So that's that balance. I mean, you said it perfectly. I mean, like, that balance is required. Like, 9 hours in a day in an office is,
yeah,
for most people, it's
just
not
getting
conducive.
Fat. I was really depressed.
Well, that's another podcast for another. I don't know. We don't talk about that kind of stuff. Well, we could. I mean, but I think that that's a health concern, obviously,
yeah.
Right? But this balance between your artistic life and your work life, what you're saying is, like, it's extremely hard to have this, like, full-time job and also do art, right?
I mean, so what happened when I did have the, like, small epiphany when I understood, oh, my God, I know how to become an artist. Like, all before that, I just didn't know how. And then there was one moment when I did know, when I had a vision.
Okay.
And
before you tell us about that vision, how long did it take for this vision, do you think? Like, when, like, because I love this. I love that you're talking about, like, vision, you know? How long did it take? Like, how many years as an office zombie? Cause I just like saying office zombie. How many years of that did it take you to get to that, you know, epiphany?
Well, I guess I wouldn't count my first 5 years of existence.
Right.
But yeah, but like 27 years, I don't know.
Wow.
I mean, it's like all my life people were telling me, okay, you're an artist, you're a painter, because you're exceptionally good at this specifically. And at the same time, they all tell me, well, yeah, you're going to be so famous when you die. And I hate this. I hate this sentence. I'm like, fuck you.
Was this like one of your aunts or like a weird relative?
Everybody, like, oh, you're so talented. It's going to be worth so much when you die. Like, yeah, thanks. Now I'm not going to be an artist.
Yeah, it's not the best thing to say to a young person.
And I always painted and I always looked for a way of expression. But I knew that the gallery world, like the traditional gallery world, is totally closed to newcomers. It's just impossible to get in.
Oh, really?
No matter where exactly. Maybe Berlin a little bit easier, but even here also it's very impossible. I knew it has to be done in some other way, which luckily today it is possible.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to... I didn't have a vision. I had a talent. I didn't have a vision. I think that was the problem.
Okay.
I didn't know what I was painting. I was painting really nice stuff, but it was less... It was artistic, but it wasn't art.
Mm.
And then basically what happened in Berlin after a year and a half of me being here...
Yeah.
By the way, I haven't been in a club for about 5 years before that. Like, I stopped clubbing when I was, like, 27. I was bored doing that. It was like, I've seen everything. I've done everything. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I felt like I'm old. It's past me. Like, I don't do that.
Wow.
So I'm 33, and my friends literally drag me to Berghain. Like, drag me. Like, you're coming with us. It's Sunday. You can go home whenever you want. I always felt tired. Like, I didn't feel like doing anything. And inside, they gave me a little bit of MDMA.
Okay.
And at that moment, I was like, yeah, I'll try it. Like, they're all fine.
Like,
I was never against, but...
Crystal MDMA, not...
Yeah,
not
yeah, like ecstasy. Not a pill. Right. Yeah. And after 20 minutes, I was cured from my depression. And the first thought I had was... Here you are. Where have you been? And I'm looking around like, what the fuck? I'm alive and I'm in Berlin and I can do whatever I want. Why was I like dead inside? What happened to me?
That's the epiphany, or
no? That was a month before that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And after that, by the way, after I returned home from that party, I was like, okay, I've been lied to. I'm going to just research everything I can about drugs and figure out what I'm going to try now, because I haven't done it before and clearly I was very much missing out.
Oh, so you never did MDMA before that?
No, that was the first time. Okay. And I was a good research geek. Research everything. And of course I decided that definitely I will do it again. But
okay.
Yeah. I went afterwards to... I started going to Berghain on Sundays just to dance, like, for 4 or 5 hours, go home, totally sober, like, just to have that experience again of the freedom you can feel inside and the freedom that I needed to feel alive. And the third time I was there, I met this guy who had some MDMA on him. And I took a lot that time, like,
really?
Way more than the first time.
Okay.
And I had this moment when I was dancing and I could feel, you know, the love for everything. And
okay.
How much I love my family, how much I love this moment, how much I want to share it. And then I was like, you can't share it. You can't even bring people inside. You can't do anything with it. And I'm looking around and I have this little light shimmering above me and the hands of people moving and this amazing sound, like, just vibrating everywhere. And I feel like... This is an abstract painting. I'm looking at an abstract painting. I can paint this. I can paint this experience. This is what I need to do. And I came home the day after, and I found the same DJ that was playing on YouTube. And I did my first techno painting. And
at
I was
home.
Like, bam.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm doing. I was still working with you in the office when
Actually,
I did that.
I think I remember that. I think that I was following your page from then. And I sort of remember there was something you did at home, actually. Now it's all sort of coming back to me, but either
And
way,
afterwards,
like,
it was like
amazing.
A force that I can't stop. Like, I need to do more. And it's like, I know this is the right path for me. I still don't know how to be an artist. I still have absolutely no connections in this industry. I could count my friends on my one hand, like in Berlin. I didn't know anybody. But I was like, this is my vision. I want to get there. I want to do this in a club.
So
while
this was the
while
epiphany.
There's a party. Yeah.
This was the epiphany. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so then, you know, I think we've got a really good idea of your path. I think I definitely see the arc, you know, so like, you know, Russia, Israel, office zombie.
Office zombie, yes.
Berlin epiphany. That's sort of the arc.
Yes.
You know? So I think we should take a break, and we will come back to exactly that point. So,
okay,
post epiphany. That's what we'll come back to. Okay, be right back. So we are back. I just have to double check. I always have to double check that we're actually recording. This is actually an Evgeny thing.
Okay,
we were talking about Evgeny earlier, and this has happened to me and Evgeny where.
You weren't
we're
sure.
Like, we thought we were recording, and like
just
15 minutes later, I'm like, "Oh my god, It's not recording. But it is. It is recording. I'm just going to double check.
Okay.
Looks good. Looks good. So, we're there in your apartment, and you're doing this first...
Yeah, I did the first painting.
The first techno painting.
Yes.
Okay.
And I actually had my aunt and my cousin and my sister coming to visit me right after, like a month after. And I had this one, the first techno painting. Not a month, actually. 2 weeks after. And I'm telling them, this is what I'm going to do. I feel it. Like, I can feel it. This is my thing. This is what I'm doing. And they're all like, come on, you just made like one painting. What are you going to do with that? And I couldn't even explain it. I just knew it's this. This is what I'm doing. And the thing is, let's be truthful, I could not concentrate at work after this whole thing happened.
Oh, okay.
Because all I wanted to do is to get back home and start looking for more techno sets and start doing more paintings. And I did. I was painting every day. So I was sitting at work for 9 hours, getting home and standing for another 5 hours painting, like every day.
Wow.
And I started feeling way better.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
physically
amazing.
Because I was standing, because I wasn't like sitting anymore.
Yeah.
And like my social life was still pretty poor, but I felt way better about how I conduct myself. I couldn't work. I did not want to be there.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the company had all these different like the changes, and my position was changed, and I was with a different team and didn't get along so well. And let's just put it this way, I was so not surprised when they fired me.
Okay.
I was almost thankful. I was like, okay, good. And I returned home. I had a friend also from Israel visiting me when that happened, so I had some emotional support.
Okay.
But I actually decided on that spot that I'm not going to tell anybody. I'm not going to tell my parents that I was fired. I'm not going to even look at it right now. I'm taking time off to do what I really want to do, which is to become the party queen of Berlin.
Nice. So
it is a little pretentious. I'm still not there, but I'm definitely working on it.
No, I mean, you know, there's obviously there's going to be party queens, not just one party
queen.
Yes,
exactly.
I mean, Berlin,
I'm not the only one.
Yeah,
definitely not.
Yeah. And I've never actually been to Berghain. It's a dream of mine.
I should take you there.
You should. You should. Oh, you've never been, Alex. Oh, my God. I didn't expect that. I thought that you probably have been there together.
So the week I was fired, I went to Berghain, obviously.
Oh, okay. Well, it makes sense. Yeah.
I found drugs inside. Like, I still didn't know how to get them on my own. And
okay. Just,
and there were, like, incredible DJs there. One of them was Takaaki Ito, which was, like, my inspiration for 3 paintings I did before that.
What was his name? Her name?
Takaaki Ito.
Takaaki Ito.
He's a Japanese DJ.
And so you did these paintings at
I
home
did,
as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, I did paintings at home with his sets.
Did
and
you
then
reach out to him?
Yes, of course. I was in the Berghain booth with him.
Oh.
About 6 months ago. He's incredibly nice. I actually had no idea why he opened the booth to me, but he opened it and I'm like, well, I'm doing this. And I got in and I'm looking from the DJ booth at Berghain. I'm like, yeah, bitch. And then I got out and snorted pretty much everything Berghain had to offer.
Oh,
I didn't
God.
Sleep for 3 days. That was a bad idea.
Yeah.
But that was a good experience on the whole of it. Yeah.
So, all right. So, take us, keep, you know, keep it going. Where did it go from there? So you...
I was in Berghain every Sunday. And I started getting connections because you're there and you're meeting a lot of people and you're very talkative and you feel very comfortable about things. And I started to get to know people from the industry, from some DJs, some also like club goers, like professional club goers.
Professional. Okay.
And one of those people that I met was actually a person that helped me have my first gig later.
Okay.
So it's always all about your friends and who you know, and that's the most important thing. I think I didn't know that before. My whole life, I treated people with caution. Like, I was... It's like I was an introvert, although I am an extrovert, which caused a lot of problems with self-image.
Okay.
And I cured myself from all those social anxieties, and it really helped me to continue doing what I'm doing. And then I dated briefly this music producer that we made together a few videos, and then I could present it to other people, like, look, I am doing this. And just continued on this path, just showing it to people, saying that this is what I'm doing, making more and more paintings, and until I had my first gig. And when I had that first gig in Cutter Blau, I was immediately booked to do another gig at Kit Kat, and then in Ritter Butzke, and then Cutter Blau again, and now it's actually working.
So let me slow it down, because that's a lot of steps there.
Yes.
So you made these videos with the producer, and so this was before you actually got the gigs at Cutter Blau.
Yes.
So the videos
it was
came
just
first.
Basically, to do this live painting for the first time, he was composing a track from scratch. I was painting a painting from scratch, and did it together when we made
home
a video
or
in his studio.
Oh, in his studio.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. That's awesome.
Yes.
So that was like the first marketing thing.
Kind of, yeah. Yes, kind of.
All right.
And that was something I can show. Like, yes, this is how it's done. Not just me painting at home, but this is I can do this live. At that point, I still was not sure about the technique of exactly how to make it. It did take longer than it takes now. But by now, I already have the steps figured out, and I can finish a painting with the DJ set in like 3-4 hours.
That is fucking
and
cool.
It's almost easy, I would say.
Once you put your mind to it, it becomes easy. It's like this podcast. It's like I explained during the break, like, what it takes to do this, and it's actually, you know, it took me a while to get to this point where I can explain it and be like, oh, it's so easy.
Yeah,
you know?
true.
But I mean, you do have to, like, put some effort into it. But, like, if anybody out there wants to do a podcast, maybe even Alex, she says she has interest.
Alex is getting inspiration.
Yeah. So,
yes.
You know, the podcasting, once you get it down, like, yeah, it's something creative or whatever, but it can also be easy. I just want to go back. So you mentioned, I think before I go too far back, you mentioned... Yeah, so you said, like, how you got to the point of getting the show, the gigs at Cutter Blau, and then like these continuous, you know, kind of gigs, basically. I think that's amazing, first of all.
Thank you.
Just want to say that. And then before that, you had mentioned that when you lost your office zombie job, that you had a friend over visiting from Israel, right? And so to me, this element of, like, emotional support, community is super important. And you said just a moment ago as well that there's this, like, you know, you have to know people and so on and so forth. And a lot of people, I think they have this idea that that is, like nefarious. It's, like, kind of, like, gross business shit, right?
No,
but
it's not.
I don't think that that's what...
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
I mean it... So
it's community.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's absolutely the other way around. I would say before I understood that I need to love my friends, I used them. I think that was the problem. And
oh, okay.
It was like the switch in my mind that I need people in my life. I should not just disregard them or like... enjoy their company whenever I wanted, and that's it. And this, it's just so important to have real human connections. And I think this was the real personality change that probably was caused by MDMA that I was taking.
Well,
but
yeah, I mean, I think that MDMA helps, but we're not here to talk about MDMA. We could totally have like another episode just about MDMA. But I think that the main thing, When you first said that, when your friend was there and you got fired and she was there and
he was there
for you.
Yeah.
He was there for you.
Yeah.
It just made me think of, like, you know, all the other people that need to be there for us, for you, for artists, you know, and it's like, or for non-artists, you know, and that's another thing.
I think some artists, or the way artists present themselves a lot, is that they tend to be loners.
Yeah.
It's kind of a romantic thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a sulky artist, yeah. You know.
Totally.
Yeah, and we're all very special and slightly narcissistic, and we're all so talented, and no one gets us. Well, I think that's bullshit. I think that comes from some insecurities. Like, yeah, insecurity is about who you are and what you really need to do. And yeah, just if you have a talent, you need to share it. Just find a way to expose it and to share it. And I think one of those things that some people tell me, because I started teaching my technique, like the way I do those paintings, the techno paintings, the painting music, I started teaching it.
Really?
And a lot of people tell me, but now you're giving away your secret. And I'm like, no, I'm sharing my talent. I want someone else to experience this as well. I want someone else to have inspiration. I don't care. So they'll use it. Okay. Like, I just got out of that mindset of, you know, I'm so special and I'm going to keep my talents to myself and they will discover me sometime. Yeah, after you're dead. That's exactly that sentence you tell me when I was young. So no, I trust the universe right now.
Okay,
I can give.
That is great. I mean, that's, yeah. It's in some way that blows my mind, just because I sort of connect very well to what you're saying, and I feel like the people who've listened to this series, this artist series, will definitely see that this, I mean, we have a lot of artists and they come and talk about life and so on and so forth and being an artist, and the really great thing about this is that everyone, every artist, every human, every person has another way of like describing this. And this, I think your idea of I just keep coming back to the word community. It's just like,
yeah,
giving. You're not always just thinking about getting, you know?
Yes, exactly.
So I think that's super important, because I think especially nowadays, like, people are always thinking about like copyrights and like, oh, this is my thing and you can't share it, and like, you know, oh, if you post this meme that I created, or then, you know, I'll come at you with some kind of a letter from my lawyer or whatever. And I get that, you know, I understand that there's this business aspect to like,
right,
art or whatever. But in terms of this podcast, like, I think that the idea that, you know, kind of giving your art to people, and I've given my art for free as well. And I mean, this podcast is free, if you want to call this art, I don't know. But you know, there is something to it. It's not always just about how much money I can make, right?
Right. Well,
I mean,
I'm not really making money out of the performances in clubs. They pay me very little.
Yeah, but
it's really more for just the fact that I am doing this. I do want to sell the paintings. I guess, mm-hmm, that's what I really want to earn the money from.
Okay. And if somebody wanted,
I've sold one.
Really?
Yes.
If I wanted to buy one of your paintings, how would I?
You should contact me.
Oh, okay, just go to your website.
Website or Techno Painting on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And you have them like posted there, like which ones you can buy, or and then like the DJ names, or I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, on the site you can every painting I've done, it's a certain set of a DJ, and I explain why I did it.
Oh.
Because it inspires me in certain ways. So.
Okay.
I really try to bring the experience of dancing to this music on canvas.
Yeah, no, that definitely comes through in the, I mean, it's like a very rhythmic sort of like.
Yes, you can
know?
Feel like the power. You can feel the power. Like, you can feel the sound wave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So yeah, I mean, this balance. I always come back to it. It's super important, and I think that, yeah, I mean, what kind of advice would you give, not necessarily to to artists, but like to anybody who is struggling with this balance. I mean, it's a very difficult question.
Struggling
with the balance between doing what you love or your art and actually, you know, and making money. Because, you know, and this, I've had some guests on the show tell me like, oh, this is, you know, this is a sensitive question, right? And I, yeah, and of course I know it's a sensitive question. But I also think that one of the most important things that artists can tell us is how they are, not only how they are creative in their art, but how they are creative in just the day-to-day shit, you know, all the financial stuff, you know. I mean, so...
Well, I have sacrificed some of the luxuries I used to have with working in online advertising, you get an okay salary. But the thing is, I was spending money on bullshit. I had like, you know, 12 pair of shoes that I really don't even wear anymore. And yeah, just I have like 3 kind of sneakers now, and that's all I wear.
That's good.
I did spend money on luxuries that I don't need. I don't go to restaurants. It's a sacrifice, of course. I have to cut down my expenses. I do bullshit jobs. I worked in KitKat as a bartender.
Oh, that's not a bullshit job.
It's not at all.
Speaking as a bartender, I don't work as a bartender right now, but that job is very undervalued.
That's true.
I mean, some places you can make a lot of money, some places you can't. Especially here in Berlin, like I think you should like. We should all respect the bartenders. But anyway, that's another podcast.
Yeah, because I gave up a secure...
Yeah, no, I get it.
Salary.
I get what you're saying, yeah.
I started doing many, many different things that give me a little bit of money on, like, some from here, some from there. Mm. I teach art to children. I work in kindergarten.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you do, like, you come in for, like, an hour or whatever?
I come for 2 days, and I have groups of children coming over to the class, like, an art class.
Cool.
Yes.
So I was just thinking, you know, about all, like, special jobs, let's say, or, like, weird jobs. Some people might consider being a bartender to be a weird job, but I don't think so. What's the weirdest job you ever had? As, you know, I know this is sort of a little bit new.
The weirdest job?
Yeah.
No, I think working in KitKat was quite out there.
No, but that's like
to be like almost naked doing that.
To paint?
To bartend in KitKat.
Oh, to bartend.
Yes.
Ah, okay, now I understand.
Not to paint in KitKat.
So painting in KitKat is much better than bartending in KitKat.
Techno painting in KitKat, yes.
Unless you have no problem with being naked, which I
don't have issues about it, but it's a challenge, obviously. It's a challenge.
So outside of that, like, what's the weirdest job? Not just as an artist, but like, what's the weirdest job you ever had?
You know what? I think still working.
Still working. Like, as a bartender.
Naked and as a bartender is quite out there.
Yeah. I mean, I've never done that.
Weirder than this. What have I done? I'm thinking. No, I think that's.
I can tell you what I think my weirdest job was. I think my weirdest job was, and most people who know me know this, and it's actually not that weird, but you're definitely going to think it's weird. I was a pet chauffeur.
A pet chauffeur?
A pet chauffeur.
Okay.
Like I was driving dogs around. Yeah.
Okay. Did they like it?
I hope so. You know, they were my clients. So, yeah, I think that, you know, this... sort of weird job thing, you know, this how do you survive, how do you do the day-to-day is like one of the main aspects of this show. And
I think even today especially, or maybe not for everybody, but if you live in a big city, you have so many opportunities to make a living out of some platforms that never existed before. For example, Airbnb. I'm not saying just rent a room or something, although obviously that's always an option to get some money. Rent your own room, like you sleep in the kitchen.
That would be an interesting job.
Yeah, I was close to this. There was a time when, really? You know, I was unemployed for like 4 months and I was going crazy at that point and I didn't know where to get money from and was thinking, oh, well, I have to be
creative.
Creative, yes, exactly. Yeah. Very creative right now.
This is the thing, yeah.
But luckily, it was just then when I saw the first painting, so I was like, oh, whew, okay. A little better now. And then I was like, wait, Airbnb offers experience as well. So it's not only to rent a room, you can also rent the service, like your ability.
I just want to quit, maybe, I mean, as far as I know, you don't work for Airbnb, right?
No. It's my thing.
Yeah, we all
use Airbnb.
Yeah, we all use Airbnb.
Yeah, as a platform.
But we're not, like, being paid to say this.
No.
At least I'm not.
No, this is me advertising my experience.
Yeah,
that is
totally
advertised
fine.
On Airbnb.
That's totally fine.
That's the reason.
Because, you know, I mean, if somebody's, like, from Airbnb is listening to this right now, they might be thinking, like, we're trying to, like, make a connection to them.
I do like the platform.
it's good. Yeah.
They're okay.
Yeah.
So it was a long time thing. I was thinking, okay, I had this idea actually to create an experience, but I didn't know exactly how to do it until I met a few friends, and actually it came from many different directions that people started telling me, you should teach. Why aren't you teaching? And at some point, it just all clicked, and I thought, why am I not teaching? I have this technique that I've made that no one else does it like this. I have a story to tell. I would like to share this experience. It's exactly what I imagined when I had that epiphany in Berghain. And then one day, I just gathered my strengths. I sat in front of the computer, and I was like, I'm doing my experience. I'm just going to do this. Just being focused and set it out there, and it'll be there. And luckily, it started working very well. And at some point, I had an Airbnb representative that came over also to my place, and she told me, you know, your experience is like one of the most top-rated in Berlin right now. I'm like,
what?
Well, I had a feeling it's going well, but clearly, it's. I would like it to be even more. I mean, for me, I could do this all day long.
Wow.
I love meeting new people. I love having this interaction. I love to see how they're so amazed at what they can do. But it's actually, they are doing it. I mean, I'm guiding a little bit, but they are completely doing it. And for me, I think this is what I want to do. I want to give my talent. I don't want to just, you know, use it and say, oh, I'm so special because I can do this. No, I want to share it. I want everybody to do this.
Okay. That's amazing. So, wow. I mean, I guess we can talk about that for a while, but I guess I just want to, since I do try to do this, like, I think that this was an amazing interview so far. We probably have a bunch of time left. We'll have to check.
We should check it.
Yeah, but...
Well, we can talk about drugs now.
Yeah, well, maybe, yeah.
We have.
Maybe, yeah. But I usually try to hit these, like, journalistic questions, who, what, where, when. I think we hit... everything, who, what, when, where, why, how. So I guess then the one thing that we haven't really, really talked about too much is the where. So it's like you mentioned Berlin a lot,
right?
Obviously, and you said that a lot of this stuff happened because it's Berlin.
Berlin,
right?
Is an amazing, amazing city.
Yeah.
I try to figure out why. I mean, I also, being a... like having a degree in history, and I know about Berlin history. I know about Berlin recent history as well. I feel like this city has magic in it because it kind of attracts all the misfits from all over the world, and they all feel at home here. And there's a reason. It's like you want to be in a place where you are free from others' judgment. And this city definitely offers that. And this is why there are so many artists that can discover themselves here. Mm. Because they get here and they finally feel free to express themselves. Because otherwise they wouldn't be able to do that.
So what makes it so good for expressing yourself? I mean, I can think of a bunch of reasons. Obviously, I think it's come
from grassroots. It's the fact that you can go out of your home dressed as really whatever, and no one will give a fuck. And you feel this, wow, I'm really me. And when you have this freedom of being really you, you get inspiration. Mm. And you, all of a sudden you feel like, I can do this, and I can do this, and I can do this, and I can share it, and I can give it, and you just grow as a person. Mm. I think many societies don't understand that by being conservative or judgmental, they kill creativity in people. Mm. And obviously, that's why they find themselves in Bergheim at some point.
So, yeah, maybe then you can compare. So you've only lived in Tel Aviv and Berlin, or? Tell me.
Chelyabinsk. Yes, Chelyabinsk. But I was very little
Then.
Yeah,
you're very little.
But so it was Soviet Russia, you know.
It sounds like it. That's me saying that as an American. Everything sounds Soviet.
It was Soviet Russia because we left just before the fall of
Soviet Russia.
Yeah, like 1 month before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, today is German
Unification
yes. Day, so actually that's quite a good little comment there.
It helped.
So you guys moved to Israel, and then the wall fell.
It was about a year and a half before.
Trying to make a terrible joke. Yeah. That was a bad joke.
What happened in Russia at that point, especially in the further cities from Moscow, or you know how everybody just know Moscow and St. Petersburg, but Russia is big, and there are many rather
it's
big
cities. The biggest
cities.
Country in the world.
Yeah, and there are many big cities.
Novosibirsk.
No, for example, which is even further.
Yekaterinburg.
Yekaterinburg is close to Chelyabinsk. It's the same region.
I work for a travel company.
So what happened is that it became quite scary. It became very unstable, almost like absolute. Well, not absolute, but some anarchy, because you just didn't know when supply is going to get into the city.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So we're talking about basic food supplies, which is just not there. Medicine, clothing, nothing was there.
I mean, in Chelyabinsk, there must have been a river or something you can get.
Yeah, but it's an industrial
forest.
City.
It's an industrial city, right?
You say river, but do you know how to fish? Yeah. I don't know.
You probably don't want to fish in that river.
Yeah, you don't want to fish that river. Yeah, never mind. Really, no.
I take that back. So
would you fish in the Spree?
No. I wouldn't even swim in the Spree.
Exactly.
And
that is way cleaner.
Way cleaner than the one in Chelyabinsk?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. So how would you compare Berlin to Tel Aviv, for example?
Tel Aviv is a very special city on itself. I like Tel Aviv. I like living there. It definitely has this also vibe of we do whatever we want, don't touch us, we don't give a fuck. And it's kind of a summer city. It's on the beach. It's on the Mediterranean Sea. It has a good vibe. Tel Aviv has a very positive vibe. But Tel Aviv is extremely expensive. Oh. And for me to stay there was only to keep my office job of working, 9-10 hours. And then I just started getting extremely depressed. And also, I always had this vision of me in Berlin. I just had it. Mm. I couldn't just erase it. And the second I had a long enough experience in this field of online advertising, I was looking for a place in Berlin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So Berlin has always been on sort of
I think since I saw Cabaret. I was a teenager or something, and I saw Cabaret, and I was like...
Is that set in Berlin? Oh, my God.
Yes, of course.
I'm terrible.
Oh, my God.
I should know this. I should definitely know that.
You need to watch it again.
Yeah, if I've ever watched it. that's probably the problem.
Yes. So I was watching this, and I was like, I was young. I was 14, I don't know. And it spoke to me. Mm. It's like these connections, you know, this is part of who you are. This is part of your character. You don't even know why, but you know there's a pull. You want to be those characters for some reason.
Can I, this might be a little too personal. I mean, I know that your last name is sort of, is it German?
Well, yeah, sort of. Schneider.
Schneider, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you do have some kind of like genetic history here in Berlin.
Yeah, but I don't know actually, because as far as I know, we are Jewish. But yeah, Jewish but names sound very German sometimes and there is a connection somewhere, yeah, but it happened long time
so
ago.
You don't. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
No, I mean, my grandparents are from Lithuania and Ukraine, so I don't really know where.
Huh. Interesting. But somehow this Schneider thing.
Well, you know, some documents got lost somewhere in the 40s, so we don't know.
Okay. I see what you're saying. No, it's just interesting to me. I never thought of it before. I don't know why it just popped into my head now. I guess we're talking about like,
yeah,
location, space, yeah, geography, which
I think,
which is definitely important.
Germany was on my mind always, part of the family history, because it's like I could not disregard Berlin ever, because one of the obviously, being Jewish in Russia, one of the stories, like, how did we get to Chelyabinsk? Ah, there was this war. Why there was this war? So you start asking questions, and you get to know a little about your family history. And the way we got there was during my grandparents being evacuated because of the war. And
because of World War II?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And this is how they met each other in Chelyabinsk, because they were from completely different countries. And my mom actually taught me German when I was very little, like 5 years old, because she was learning German when she was in school. And because her grandfather was a captive soldier. And the reason he was kept alive, because he was a translator, because he knew German. So my mom was like, well, you better learn German.
Just in case.
So, just in case. Yes, just in case. Well, that went to a bad. yes.
Well, yeah. Wow. No, I mean all these stories and histories and steps are definitely important.
I think in my personal history, I could not disregard Berlin. Obviously, after I got to Israel, and Berlin is a significant
all right
mark.
Yeah, I think that we should take a break now. I think you've really given us, definitely given me a very, very colorful, clear, you know, image and sort of vision, to use your own words, of like, you know, how this all, like, your artistic life has come about. And actually, I have a technical question for you.
Right.
When I'm speaking to you and this microphone is in front of my face, can you hear me? Like, we're in this bar.
I hear you quite well.
Because, unfortunately, I only have this one set of headphones.
Right.
And I'm always wondering, I think my
do I sound like a hamster?
You sound perfect.
Okay.
You sound perfect.
I don't sound like a hamster.
I can hear everything in the headphones.
Okay.
And you sound perfect.
Good.
But I'm just wondering, like, with you don't have headphones on.
No.
You don't hear what's being recorded.
No, but I hear you.
So, anyway, That was just.
That was my question of how are you going to record in a bar? But
yeah, no. Yeah, this is the way. This is the way I do it. This is the Voices from the Dark. I mean, all the series, the artist series, Mistaken Ideas, the philosophical one,
I think it's a great idea.
Political one. Yeah.
I think if you record like artists, you should record them in a bar.
For sure.
Yes.
I mean, the vibe, the atmosphere is totally good. I think we should take another break and then come back and wrap it up.
Okay.
All right.
Perfect. Okay. Yes.
Alrighty, we are back. So we're going to close out the podcast with basically just anything.
Just
everything.
Anything is everything.
Anything and everything and something and nothing. Maybe that's for another podcast on a different topic. But I think, like I said before the break, I think that first of all, you said everything very clearly and very, I mean, I'm still going to be thinking about this for several days after the, after this recording. So, yeah, I think that we kind of achieved the goal of this podcast is to hear your journey and hear your experience, like how you got to, and for you specifically, it's very fresh, you know, like this is all a lot of stuff.
It's 2 years, basically. 2 years, yes.
So I don't think we need to, maybe if you come back on another episode, you know, we can talk about things as they progress. We can also talk about now, you know, anything like MDMA. I mean,
oh, my favorite topic. Yeah. No, actually, very important, like to say, you do need to be careful with substances.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to just go like, oh yeah, do drugs.
No, this podcast is actually registered on iTunes, and yes. I'm assuming that crosses to any other service that actually taps into iTunes. This is like basically X-rated.
Right.
This is an X-rated.
Yeah, because
X-rated, but like adults only.
Yeah.
So
I don't think young people should. Well, you know what? No, maybe they should hear it. I actually think young people should be educated about drugs and exactly how they work and what they do. Because what happens is that it's due to lack of education that they do drugs inappropriately.
Yes.
And they hurt themselves.
Definitely.
But as I said previously, I did some research as a real geek, as a university student. I did research on drugs. I didn't just decide, oh, well, I'm just going to, you know, do whatever. Not that I was extremely careful later, but I am a grown-up.
You're an adult.
And yes, I am. Sometimes I do feel like I'm a teenager, but...
That's fine.
But I am an adult. It's all very calculated. Yeah. Even when I kind of lose control, I don't really lose control. I try to avoid those moments.
I mean, there's also an aspect of community and everything. It's like if you trust the people you're with and that, you know, and that they're there and they're taking care of you and you're taking care of them.
Yes. There's another thing I want to say about like Berlin club culture. This is the most respectful culture you can imagine.
Really? Wow.
It's light years away from the experience that you will have in like other cities or like even in Tel Aviv, which is supposed to be a liberal city. But being a woman in a club in Tel Aviv, you feel a little uncomfortable. You're like on a defense because so many men are hitting on you and inappropriately, and it feels awkward. It feels like you can't really enjoy yourself. Mm. It feels like you're constantly rejecting people, and it weighs on you as well. And that doesn't happen here. You can be half naked. You can be totally naked in a club. And no one will look at you inappropriately.
Wow.
Everybody just talks to you, wants to know who you are. And I do suspect that it's the culture of taking nice drugs. Well, I believe alcohol is a bad drug. I believe this is one of the causes of violence and sexual violence and stupidity and like stupid mistakes and stupid accidents.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, when you take some other drugs, you are way more in control of what you're doing. And I never drink when I take those substances.
Okay.
And I really make sure that I just...
I feel like that's my big problem.
I remember what's happening.
Yeah. I generally will be drinking... And if there's anything else that I want to take, it'll be in addition to drinking, which actually, alcohol is a hell of a drug.
Yes, it is. It's so easy to get, it's so easy to take, and it's a drug, and people forget it. And they have such a bad idea of, some people are, I think, they're very hypocritical because they would look at me like, oh, she takes drugs. Like, yeah, and I've never been better, physically and mentally, because I stopped drinking. And, yeah.
Yeah, there's something about alcohol that does kind of bring out, like, a kind of mean side of a lot of people.
Yeah.
Even me, like, I tend to drink, you know, not necessarily too much, but I do drink often. I've definitely had those moments where... there's some kind of aggression coming out. And I know that it's not just the alcohol. It's also part of my personality, but the alcohol doesn't help it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I think that what you said about control, that's actually quite interesting, because most people think the opposite. You know, they think that, let's say, cocaine makes you, like, insane.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, but
that's when you do it too often.
Yes.
I'm talking about like one every hour a day. I know some people.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
I'm talking about party drugs, not when you have an addiction problem.
Well, cocaine in Berlin is a party drug.
Yeah.
Of course.
So what I'm saying is like, you know, people think like, oh, if you take cocaine or if you're drinking, it's like the drinking is less harmful. I don't know, because the cocaine actually, if you're completely sober, if you've not had a drink, any drinks, I think the cocaine would actually like just make you like super aware.
Super
you
probably alert. Would be, you super alert.
Alert,
yes,
exactly.
Super alert.
And I think you would probably be bored.
More talkative.
Yeah. I think you would be bored if everybody around you was drunk and you would probably just go home.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's just
That might happen.
I mean, if everybody's like drinking alcohol and they're all like, you know,
about cocaine, I would say that I'm extremely careful with that substance.
Well, yeah,
because it's so easy.
Yeah.
And it is a very effective in getting you alert, but it also too easy, even too easy to do. And then unlike something like MDMA, which is an experience of like 6 hours and it gives you a total different emotional state and shows you things
psychedelic.
Other psychedelics even way more intense.
Like what? Like, I mean, the only psychedelics I've ever taken, if we consider MDMA and ecstasy to be psychedelics, I've taken those.
It's considered a mild psychedelic.
And weed.
Weed is actually very strong for me. I mean, I can't smoke much.
Yeah, my brother is the same way. Like, weed for him is like acid.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Yeah. I think for some people it can be like that, yeah.
So I've never taken acid, never taken...
Acid
well, I've taken mushrooms.
Okay.
But I was always drinking.
Okay.
So I don't know... I've never felt...
So it was a very small amount of mushrooms?
I mean, it was relatively small, yeah.
Okay.
And also I was drinking, so... Even if it was like...
Oh, never drink with psychedelics. It's like...
Really?
Psychedelics do not like alcohol.
And so
it's like when you're on acid and you see drunk people, it's like you feel something is wrong with them. Like you visually see it. Like they're distorted.
Yeah, I think
it's so strange.
Yeah.
But I have to say, obviously, when I was unemployed and having fun with all the clubbing, I did a lot of things.
Okay.
And each of those experiences taught me something.
Okay.
And I don't use it lightly. Like, it's not to get into a club and get fucked up. This is what alcohol is for, actually.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And
this
is really not what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I want to get inspired. I want to have those epiphany moments, which I had on acid, very, like, spiritual experiences,
okay,
which many people talk about as well, that do help me grow as a person.
Yeah. I really actually think that this... You know, this is totally unscripted. Like, most of these podcast episodes, all the podcast episodes I've ever done are unscripted. Like, I'm always stating, like, what the questions are. I always say in every episode, I'm going to ask who, what, when, where, why. Any other questions that come up are totally random. And this is totally random.
Right.
But I do think that there is possibly another series in this. Like... psychedelics, drugs, and so on.
Definitely.
I mean, it doesn't mean that we have to like do MDMA and then do a podcast episode, which would be amazing. But, you know, we could talk about it. I think that there's other guests and other like co-hosts that have been on the show, which I think I mentioned already. I don't know why I'm being evasive about that. Evgeny, basically. That I think would be totally down with that. So, you know, sort of, I think that, you know, we should probably finish the episode on that, which is...
Little advertisement Airbnb experience, because this is basically the thing that gives me most pleasure at the moment. I love doing it, and I really want more people to come and experience this with me. It's called Paint Together with a Berlin Artist, and basically you should see it immediately if you go to Airbnb Experience Berlin. And I would love to see more people coming over to my experience, to the workshop.
So The name of the experience on Airbnb is Paint Together with a Berlin Artist. And if you go to the Berlin
experience section.
This is actually new to me. I don't know what this experience
Many not know about this. Yeah. This is why I think it's important to
So if somebody goes to that in the Berlin area of the experience thing, then they'll see you.
Yeah, yeah, they should see it. One of the top options, actually.
Wow.
Yes.
Congratulations. That's awesome. So yeah, go to Airbnb, check out Dina's experience, Airbnb experience. Go to her website. Don't tell me. Technopainting.com.
Yes, technopainting.com.
Very difficult to remember. And perhaps you'll hear more from Dina in other episodes.
I would love to. That was fun.
Or even simply an update. You know, an update episode. You know, telling us what you're doing lately.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks again, Dina, for being here. I really, really appreciate it. You've been an amazing guest, and
it's been super fun.
Your story,
thank you.
Your story is very unique and inspiring and amazing. So yeah, thank you again.
Thank you so much. Okay.
And Alex, thank you for being here. Hopefully you're inspired as well. You know? And we don't have a mic for Alex, but she's here and she loves podcasts.
Yes.
I guess. Possibly. I love podcasts. And this has been Voices from the Dark. Thanks for listening. See you next time.